the Director of Clinical Training, is in. Welcome to the DCT Podcast, your portable meeting with the Director of Clinical Training. I'm Joel Hughes, the DCT for the Clinical Psychology Program at a Midwestern university. This is private social media, so this podcast is not endorsed by my program, department, or university. My views are my own. In this episode, I will discuss the Enhanced Examination for Professional Practice in Psychology, or ECPP. I will also tell you about an article that's forthcoming in the American Psychologist by Jennifer Callahan and her colleagues that raises some questions about the ECPP, and then I'll add some questions of my own using a metaphor. I'll close with some suggestions for what you should do. Saturday morning at the January 2019 midwinter meeting of the Council of University Directors of Clinical Psychology, or CUDCUP, in New Orleans, I was feeling pretty relaxed. Winter Storm Harper buried my travel plans for getting home from the meeting, but I was able to extend my stay in New Orleans, so I was not in a rush. I eased into my chair for a full day of presentations. However, my serenity was interrupted when a spirited discussion of the enhanced ECPP noted some concerns. Jacqueline Horn, Director of Regulatory Affairs, and Thomas Granados from the Board of Directors presented on behalf of the Association of State and Provincial Psychology Boards, or ASPPB. It was billed as an ECPP2 discussion. Okay, what am I talking about? We'll keep these terms straight. The EPPP, or ECPP, is the Examination for Professional Practice in Psychology. It's developed and owned by the ASPPB, although the vendor is Pearson VUE, who administers this computer-based exam at testing centers. The ECPP is a multiple-choice knowledge test of the contemporary knowledge base necessary for the competent practice of psychology. It covers 8 content areas, like the biological basis of behavior, assessment and diagnosis, treatment, intervention, and so on. When you apply for licensure in your state or province, you're authorized to register for and take the ECPP. The fee is $600, not including the test center appointment fee. There are 225 items, and you're allowed 4 hours and 15 minutes to complete the exam. If your score is higher than the passing score for your state or province, congratulations. Now things are changing. The original ECPP is now referred to as the ECPP Part 1. Another test, the ECPP Part 2, has been in development. Together, they comprised the enhanced ECPP. And most of my comments about the ECPP on this podcast are about Part 2. Okay, back to the discussion at the midwinter meeting of CUDCUP. The presenters and the discussants traded volleys, sometimes with the audience. The discussion degenerated, but remained civil. The matter was unresolved, or so I thought. It was long forgotten about, as I got back to writing the APA self-study. Until, that is, I received an email about a forthcoming article in the American Psychologist about the enhanced ECPP. The title is The Enhanced Examination for Professional Practice in Psychology, a Viable Approach? I will put this in the show notes, a link to the article. The authors are Jennifer Callahan, Deborah Bell, Joanne Davila, Sherry Johnson, Timothy Strauman, and Cindy Yee. The email said that the planned launch date of the ECPP is January 2020. I thought the matter was unresolved. I sprang into action and wrote the script for this podcast, dear listener. Here's some background based on my notes from the discussion. The ECPP has a 54-year history, and the Part 2 initiative is the biggest news in a long time. Apologies were made for poor dissemination of information during this process. There's a January 2020 rollout for the early adopter jurisdictions, and the new test fees will be $100 for early adopters, then $300 until January 2022, and then $450 after January 2022. Final decisions about the enhanced ECPP will be made in 2022, or so I thought. Well, I checked online. Turns out, if you're eligible to apply for licensure in Arizona, Guam, Nevada, Newfoundland and Labrador, or Prince Edward Island, you need to take the enhanced ECPP starting January 1st, 2020. If you live in Missouri, the enhanced ECPP will start February 15th of 2020 and March 1st for Manitoba and finally November 1st for Georgia. If you're living in Ohio, there's a clarification on the Ohio Board of Psychology website that Ohio is not an early adopter. And it says that, therefore, Ohio licensure will continue to require a passing score on the current ECCC during 2020 and until further notice. Should the board decide to require the ECCC 2 in the future, advanced notification will be given. So what? What is the ECCC and how is it enhanced, the exam? Why is there an article forthcoming in the American Psychologist questioning the viability of this approach? To make it more accessible, allow me to employ a metaphor, the driving test. In most states, when you first apply for licensure as a motor vehicle operator, aka driver, you must pass the eye exam, the written or oral test, you must have documented supervised driving experience, and then you must pass an in-car driving test. The written or oral test is a multiple choice test to evaluate your knowledge of the rules of the road. Do you know the driving laws and regulations? You must pass this test to be allowed to schedule an on-road driving test. The driving or practical test involves driving a car on the road, and in Ohio there are two parts. First, the road test, and second, the maneuverability test. The road test evaluates elements like stopping and starting, turning, and using turn signals, driving in the correct lane, and maintaining a safe following distance. The maneuverability test evaluates whether or not you can parallel park without hitting the cones and such. The comparison to the enhanced ECCC is obvious. For years, the ECCC has consisted of only the knowledge test, with no applied skills test. So, you know the rules of the road, but can you operate the vehicle? I think this makes a ton of sense. I don't want people on the road who didn't pass the vision test or the knowledge test, or who had no supervised driving experience, or who failed the test of driving or maneuverability. I know parallel parking may not come up that much, but I don't want some 16-year-old backing into my car. For psychology licensure, supervised experience is necessary as well as the knowledge test. Why not a skills test? The motive for the second part of the ECCC was the move towards competency-based education and evaluation in health service psychology and in the rest of advanced healthcare professions in general. Who could argue with that? Well, part two of the ECCC is billed as an applied skills test. In the materials online, part one is called the knowledge test and part two is called the skills test. This distinction is a focus of some of the criticism. But first, what is the basis of Callahan et al.'s critique of the ECCC Part 2? Callahan and colleagues draw a distinction between validity and validation. They write, "Despite the phonemic similarity between validity and validation, the two terms are associated with different meanings, accuracy versus appropriateness, respectively." Well, what validity information is available for Part 2 of the ECCC? With respect to accuracy indices, content validity is available. What about structural validity, which is to say the degree to which the relationships among items reflect a theoretical framework, which might be evaluated, say, via a confirmatory factor analysis? This is not available. What about the stability across groups, which is to say the degree to which the content and structural validity indicators are stable across different specified subgroups? This is not available. The goal is reported, but the details of which subgroups are being considered is not provided. Okay. What validity information is not available for the ECCC Part 2? Let's look at appropriateness in indices. Convergent validity? No. Concurrent validity? No. Predictive validity? No. Discriminant validity? No. Incremental validity? No. What about testing the ECCC Part 2 in known groups? No. What about evaluating the consequences of the implementation of the ECCC Part 2? No. What about assessing the feasibility of the ECCC Part 2? Well, ASPPB offered a limited period of reduced fee to address concerns raised by graduate students, trainees, and professors, and that is the early adopter phase. In their defense, ASPPB says that their only responsibility is content validity. In their frequently asked questions document online, they specifically state that the accepted standard of validity for credentialing and licensing exams is content validity. And the idea there is that other types of validity, such as predictive validity and incremental validity, are not appropriate for licensure examinations. The reason for this is because of the licensure process seeks to determine whether or not people pass or fail. And each of the elements necessary for licensure, such as supervised clinical experience, part one of the ECCP, part two of the ECCP, all of these elements are necessary in terms of being at a minimum level or a threshold of competence for each one. I think that they make a good point. Compare that to a driving test. You have to pass the vision test. You have to have supervised experience. You have to pass the knowledge test to schedule the skills test. And then you have to pass the skills test. All of these are separate parts. So going back to the issue of predictive validity or incremental validity, the road test and the maneuverability test do not need to predict additional variance in future driving skill, because it appears clear on the face of it that demonstrating the skill of being able to safely operate a vehicle is different than knowing the rules of the road. On the other hand, I'm not sure it's appropriate to dismiss all need for further evaluation of the second part of the ECCP. Let's return to the issue of how the two parts of the enhanced ECCP are described. Part one is called the knowledge test, and part two is called the skills test. Part two is described as an applied skills test. This is quite analogous to a driving test. Part one is a knowledge test about the rules of the road, and the on-road driving test, or part two, is an applied skills test to show that you can operate a vehicle safely. And this is where the analogy that I've chosen illustrates one of the issues with the enhanced ECCP. Because part one of the ECCP is a multiple choice test, and part two of the ECCP is also essentially a self-report and multiple choice test. The types of items are multiple choice or multiple response, where you're allowed to choose more than one response. For example, select all that apply, which might be 2 out of 5 options. Also, there may be scenarios which present information in an applied situation with exhibits, such as a test protocol, an animation, a video, and then each exhibit can have up to 5 questions that pertain to that part of the scenario. There's point and click, in which a graphical image is presented, and the candidate selects one or more areas of the image to indicate a response to an item about that image. And there's a drag and drop, matching a multiple appropriate stimuli on one side of the screen to responses on the other side of the screen. Okay, so items might look like this. A psychologist is trained in CBT, but someone that they supervise is unsure whether or not to use CBT or behavioral activation for moderate depression. What should the psychologist do? Choose the best response. Or, what two parts of this business card created for a practicum placement violate APA and CPA ethics codes? You would then click on the parts of the business card that are inappropriate. So imagine how this would work for a driving test. On the screen, you see a picture of the pedals in your car. What does the pedal furthest to the right do? On the screen, you see a freeway with moderate traffic. Click on the screen to show where your car should be positioned in the lane and how far behind the next car you should be following. Or how about this? From the answer choices, how abruptly do you stop? Or how about, you come to a stop sign. Indicate whether you should fail to stop, make a full stop, or slowly roll through the stop sign. Or, from the answer choices, how consistent is your vehicle speed and how variable is your position in the lane? Choose all that apply. Is this a test of driving skill? Or is this another knowledge test? Well, this test does not offer any opportunity to demonstrate skill in operating the vehicle. So back to part two of the ECCP. Well, despite the phonemic similarity between content validity and content validity, they're not always the same thing, or at least the term has some ambiguity or semantic range that we can appreciate. ASPPB defined content validity in their frequently asked questions document as representation of a content domain. But how do we understand skill in relation to content domains? Well, according to Wikipedia, which I trust completely, A skill is the ability to carry out a task with determined results, often within a given amount of time, energy, or both. Skill usually requires environmental stimuli and situations to assess the level of skill being shown and used. So driving skill is demonstrated by carrying out the tasks of operating a motor vehicle, and health service psychology skill would be demonstrated by carrying out the tasks related to the practice of psychology? Okay. The Oxford Quick Reference Dictionary of Psychology defines a content domain as follows. In psychometrics, a clearly defined body of knowledge, skills, abilities, aptitudes, or tasks that may be measured with an appropriately constructed test. In the same dictionary, content validity is defined as, in psychometrics, the extent to which the items of a test are appropriate to the content domain of the test. So, ASPPB has gone to great lengths to clearly define the content domain using job task analyses, which could include knowledge, skills, and so on. But content validity would require items appropriate for the demonstration of skill, which is the ability to carry out a task. So that begs the question, can skill be assessed versus multiple choice or multiple response? I'm willing to allow that maybe some skills from the job task analysis, such as the interpretation of a test protocol, could be assessed using self-report. On the other hand, it may be very difficult to demonstrate the use of some skills that need to be assessed in a skills test. Can you see my point? In my view, part two of the ECCC has not demonstrated content validity for applied skills. The content domain can include both knowledge and applied skills, but in my view, the format of the ECCC Part 2 is poorly suited to the evaluation of skills as people typically understand them. That is, a computerized test of an applied skill is like assessing what a potential driver knows about how their car operates, or what they would do or should do in different driving situations, but there would be little opportunity to demonstrate that they can do any of the relevant driving skills. Other professions, such as medicine, do have applied skills tests that involve the demonstration of skills. And of course, the scope of that endeavor may be beyond the current capabilities of ASPPB. To be fair, perhaps people's answers on items of Part 2 of the ECCC are strongly related to the level of skill that they would display when practicing psychology, but that would require validation studies, wouldn't it? And there do not appear to be any plans for these studies. I'll put a link to the Callahan and colleagues article in the show notes, and information on the enhanced ECCC is available at asppb.net. So what should you do, dear listener? Well, first of all, be aware of whether or not the enhanced ECCC is required in the jurisdiction where you will be applying for licensure. Second, go read the Callahan et al. Article in the American Psychologist. And third, read more about the enhanced ECCC at asppb.net. Thanks for listening to the DCT podcast. If you want to contact me, email me at jhughes1@kent.edu. Remember, this is private social media and my podcast is not endorsed by my university, department, or program. The podcast does not establish a supervisory relationship, blah, 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 more disclaimer, my views are my own. If my views contradict those of your DCT or advisor, you can ignore me. Remember, not all DCTs are your DCT. If you enjoyed the podcast, rate it on iTunes or Spotify, and don't tell your friends, unless they're graduate students in health service psychology.